welcome to another episode of the SB Live Washington Podcast, a weekly conversation about high school sports across the Evergreen State and the people who play them. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live, and I'm excited later on in the episode to be joined by Ryan Paplinski. He's the athletic director, boys basketball coach, and COVID coordinator at St. George's School in Spokane, and lately he's been helping the WIAA understand how and when high school sports across the state might return under the new reopening metrics put out by the governor's office last week. We talked about those metrics on the podcast last week as well. The we I speak of are my co-pilots of this ship who join me now. From Spokane, he's SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and college All-American, former NBA guard Dan Dickow is here. Also here, he's the prodigal son of Tacoma. He's your pal and mine, whether he likes it or not. And he's a senior reporter with SB Live, Todd Millis. Gentlemen, we're recording this after a wind rainstorm that I think all of us in each corner of the Pacific Northwest felt. How are you guys? Are you still standing?
All good, thankfully. Nothing crazy in my house or my neighborhood. But yeah, there's quite a bit of interesting things that occurred over the last 24 hours due to weather.
Yeah, you're right. The weather was bad. Dickow, we need to shorten your resume for podcast recording purposes.
I hear you.
You gotta let us know which one you prefer the most, you know, because you're kind of a regular guy. I mean, you'll never be a regular guy anymore, but you know, you gotta sort of live a regular guy life sooner or later, you know.
The name should carry, but just in case.
Friend of Todd Millis and Andy Bueller.
There we go. I like that. Okay. On last week's episode, we reacted to the news of the governor releasing those new reopening metrics that allow most high school sports to return to competition in regions that reach phase two of his two-phase plan, and we broke down the WI's decision shortly thereafter to move fall sports to first up, stick with a February 1st tentative first day of practice. We'll get a better idea from Ryan Paplinski later in the episode of what it's going to take to get to phase two. That's still kind of one of the lingering questions. There's in the previous metrics that the governor put out in late 2020, there wasn't a ton of movement, and those hardline numbers that we talked about last week were just really difficult to reach. And oftentimes, no districts or counties were able to get to the point where they could return to play, and districts felt comfortable allowing that to happen. We also talked last week about how leagues would have the option to opt out of this WIAA season and say, hey, look, you know, we want to craft our own schedule around something that's more locally specific, something that works for what we value, and not have, you know, this top down schedule, because there's not going to be any state championships this year. So, you know, what's the point anyways? Why not localize it? And, you know, more and more leagues as days go on have started to do that. Todd, you and I have been tracking that. What are the updates on what leagues are doing, especially, you know, the bigger ones that might have schools that are bigger name brand schools?
Yeah, I think you're going to see virtually every league, it looks like right now in at least the big schools that I've contacted. They're going to follow a lot of what Mike McKee, the Linden High School Athletic Director in the Northwest Conference, their plan that they put forward. They're the first school to apply for an opt-out and were approved. And then obviously a lot of people have been talking about what the WESCO plan has been, that Robert Polk, the Everett School District Athletic Director, was sort of spearheaded up there. You're going to see a lot of the leagues, and maybe possibly even when the WIAA announces what they're going to do in season two, season three, follow some version of either one of those plans. And the SBSL 4A and PCL and SBSL 2A and some of these leagues that are being kind of created, this Kitsap league. And you know, I think a lot of them are going to follow the let's play football first. Let's do spring sports second. And then let's let basketball kind of, you know, bring up the rear. You know, the only variance you're going to see, that the two variances you're going to see specific to leagues are starting dates for each season. Some are going to start February 1st, I think. I think some are going to start as late as February 17th. You know, those leagues obviously are a lot more in tune to what their schools can do. And then obviously what to do with some of these movement sports, you know, tennis, golf, are they going to be played in season one? Can you play golf in season one? Can you play tennis in season two or season three? So, you know, specific tweaks to some of the smaller movement sports, I think are going to differentiate some of the plans. But when it's all said and done, Andy, I think, you know, a lot of these opt-out plans are going to look very, very similar other than some of the start dates.
Absolutely. Yeah. And administrators are, you know, working overtime right now to get this, these leagues and local high school sports schedules, plans intact in case and just so everybody's ready so that if a region reaches phase two, hey, we're ready to go. There's a lot of urgency. And you know, the good thing is that everybody is, you know, keen on working together. The administrators I've talked to across the state are, you know, everyone's on the same team here. Everyone wants games. Everyone wants to create opportunities. So, you know, those creating schedules, league schedules, is all that's going to be ironed out in the next few weeks at the admin level. But if you're a high school athlete right now, and especially in those, you know, quote unquote winning sports that got bumped up to first in line, like football, like volleyball, you're probably sitting here thinking, wow, hey, this is the first great news I've heard in you know, who knows how long. Dan, what advice would you give a high school athlete right now in a fall sport with who just received the news that a potential season is quickly approaching?
You know, the first thing I would hope is that these student athletes would have been finding ways to stay in shape as best they can, because it's very difficult to go 0 to 100 the day practice would begin under WI guidelines. I know there's lots of private gyms here and there that people have snuck into for workouts, this, that, and the other. But, you know, if it's important to you, I'm sure you've been finding things to do over the last however many months to prepare yourself for the day that the game or practices are ready. So I would imagine those players would start ramping up the workouts in expectation to get going. But I think the biggest thing would be prepared for changes in schedules on the fly. You've seen it in professional, you've seen it in college sports. I'm sure you're going to see it in high school sports. So be prepared to have things change on the fly, but enjoy the moment, because quite frankly, I don't think any of us expected or realized that in the state of Washington for high school sports, those state basketball tournaments were the last things that had happened. And so you never know when you're going to get another chance to play. So just go out there, play the sport that you love with a passion, and enjoy it.
No question. And everybody, it seems to be, all parties that make up the high school sports landscape are kind of cautiously creeping toward you know, February in preparation, knowing that, you know, hey, this might get delayed. This isn't written in pen, as Mick Hoffman has said all these months. And, you know, one of those, before we get to Ryan Paplinski, our interview, I just spoke to Todd Stordahl. He's the the director of the Washington Officials Association. And refs and officials across all sports are getting ready just like everyone else is, too. And we talked over the summer with Todd. He was on this podcast when they came up with the number after a survey that about 30% of officials weren't going to be ready or weren't going to feel comfortable playing reffing in a pandemic based on, you know, pre-existing conditions, at-risk categories, and you know, just overall caution. And that number, I was told just before we started recording, I talked to Todd, is probably around the same right now. There's not an exact measurement, but they're probably around 30% still are not entirely comfortable. But the things that are that have left him optimistic about the status of officials entering a season, and as we start to gear up to that, are one, economic downturn always produces new officials, something that it makes sense to me, but I hadn't heard before. And yeah, there's just been, as the vaccine continues to roll out, and the promise of, and the more we learn about this virus, I think there's going to be some minds changed as well. So, Thank you both for making it work today. It's great catching up with you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan Paplinski of St. George's joins. I want to take a moment to tell you about our friends at Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, drive-up ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of SB Live Sports and SB Live Washington. The folks at Washington Federal care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the state of Washington and beyond. Head to wafdbank.com to learn how Washington Federal can help you meet your financial goals. That's wafdbank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. Welcome back to the SB Live Washington podcast. It's just me, Andy Bueller, no more Dan Dickauer, Todd Millis, and I'm excited to welcome on a new guest, St. George's athletic director, boys basketball coach, and COVID coordinator, Ryan Paplinski. Ryan, welcome on. You've been handling protocols at your own school, which has been in person. And we were just saying this before we started recording, but it seems like every time I talk to you, you've added a new hat, a new set of responsibilities. How are you holding up?
Well, first of all, thanks, Andy. And yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm holding up well. You know, having the kids here gives you a lot of energy. And, you know, the staff, getting to talk to folks, getting to communicate to other people, you know, face to face is pretty good, even if it's at a distance. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to, hopefully getting sports rolling here pretty soon. We can do it safely, and I think we can follow some protocols and get our kids active again.
One of the things I've heard, one of the biggest challenges from coaches and administrators alike these last 10, 11 months has just been those who haven't really been allowed back in the building or haven't been allowed to see their students, their athletes in person. You have, and I'd imagine a lot of those in your network are maybe in different positions there than you are. How has that dynamic been, and what difference has it made for you navigating this, getting that contact?
Well, it is a little bit different. I think, we started rolling out with our younger grades. So we started K-2 and then added 3, 4, 5 and actually sixth grade, where they're kind of cohorted, and later rolled out our middle school. And then I think it was late October, brought back our high schoolers 2 days a week. And today is actually the first day where we've actually been able to have our full high school here for those who choose to come. We still have some kids distance learning and staying home learning online. But it's, there was a big jump in just how the demeanor of kids once they get to go to school. And I think a little bit of that with the kids going 2 days a week has waned, just because there's still 5 days a week where you don't have that contact. And, just when we announced that we were going to go 4 days a week, boy, that the shoulders picked back up and the chins picked back up. And, so a little added stress as far as making sure we're spaced right and we're still being able to follow all of our protocols. But right now, we're prioritizing both safety and the mental well-being, emotional well-being of our kids.
So statewide, it's been a fairly busy last week or so. As we know, the governor released a new set of metrics and guidelines, a reopening plan that maps out how and when high school athletics can return to play, and gives sort of a light at the end of the tunnel for a lot of sports. That is contingent on, I should say, regions in the state jumping from phase one to phase two. And for, whether you've been covering this and involved in this for the last 10 months, like you have, or you're just, a parent or a student trying to figure out when you could play, parsing through these metrics can be a little bit difficult. So I want to walk through some of the requirements for a region to jump to phase two. So now, based on these are based on trends. So Regions have to show a 10% decrease in trend in case rates, a 10% decrease in COVID hospitalizations, a lower than 10% test positivity rate, and an ICU occupancy rate under 90%. Now, each region starts at phase one and it's going to be reassessed every week, starting, I think Friday was the first time that was reassessed, but they'll be reassessed, I believe, Fridays or Mondays. The first numbers were released last Friday and no counties qualified for phase two, but a couple were fairly close. WI Executive Director Mick Hoffman, I should say, told me yesterday that the hospitalization over 14-day metric seemed a little bit out of whack with the other three metrics, but they're going to continue to monitor before jumping to any conclusions. Your role, you've developed sort of a role with the WIA, and right after these metrics were released, the WIA's executive board is trying to make a decision on, okay, well, what does this mean for the return of sports? And what you did in that was put in a lot of time, I'm sure, going through each region and seeing, okay, based on publicly available health data and numbers, where is each region at and how feasible is making that jump from phase one to phase two? What was that process like on your end, and what were your findings?
Well, the process wasn't too hard, although I wasn't using all the same numbers they were using. You know, I just used their main website that everybody has access to, the Department of Health, and tried to extrapolate those numbers from there. I didn't go back a full month like they did. So that, like, some of their numbers start in November, and I was using the most current 2-week data that they had full data on. And so the numbers were different than, you know, a few of the numbers were different. Actually, some were still pretty close. But when you see their list of where they take their metrics from, I've been able to find where those are listed. And that doesn't mean they're not out there somewhere, but they're not readily available on that same website. So, you know, I thought, you know, looking at it for the first time, you know, I think there's always a little bit of panic when there's a switch in metrics. And, you know, the one consistent during this whole time as we learn more about the spread, about the diseases, we've been changing, right? I mean, when we first got to school, there were some things you had to do, the protocols where we learned, hey, this is a better way to do it, and this is a safer way to do it, and you move along and do those things. So, you know, I try to, you know, try to put that in action, just say, hey, what does this mean? And, you know, I think it'll be a couple weeks, and my guess is the Department of Health, the governor will make some changes as they see data come in, and you know, the WIA, I know, is going to have a voice and say, hey, this is what we can do. You know, there's a lot of data out there, not only in our state, I mean, nationwide, worldwide, that people have gone back to school and started up activities and got through a lot. And, you know, there's been places where there's been spread, and okay, how can you, can, you know, make sure that doesn't happen? And I think, you know, I can't comment on if these metrics are going to be a good way to do it or not. You know, we're the only state that's doing it. I don't know how tested it is. I don't know if they've run the numbers for the last 6 months to see if these metrics, if they meet these metrics that everybody be safe or safer or risk, less risk. But, you know, I guess, you know, you hope, and probably give everybody the benefit of the doubt. They're trying to do the best they can.
It's a new set of rules. It's a new, you know, way of taking a look at reopening, and something that I've heard, you know, Todd Millis said it on the podcast last week. The WIA has said it. They feel that judging based off of trends as opposed to hardline numbers gives schools a better shot of returning to play. Based on what you've seen, do you agree with that?
I think so. I think so. I think, you know, I guess I who knows? I think it will, but I guess I don't have enough data to back up, you know, that opinion. I think I wish there were some other metrics involved, right? And understanding kind of that, the mind of a high school kid, you know, I think that big worry early was young kids will never wear masks. Well, every kid's masked up. We don't have anybody saying, I'm just not wearing my mask, or I'm going to wear it wrong, or I'm, you know, everybody's been compliant. You know, they've been compliant with the spacing. They've been compliant all the way around. And when you see other states competing, what you found was that in the head of a high school student or maybe even a parent of a high school athlete, you know, they will do whatever it takes to stay safe and in action, right? I mean, they've, you know, you saw in interviews, you know, how did you approach this season with football in Idaho? And three kids, we didn't get together on weekends. We told our family they couldn't see their friends. We did everything we could to make sure we could play on Friday night. And while there was some setbacks, there wasn't many compared to how many games went on and how many activities went on. I think if you allowed that, what you would see is you'd probably see numbers start to go down, at least amongst that group, right? You know, high schools, high school parents, I think you'd see those numbers start to dwindle based on that psychology. But again, that's an opinion. That's not a, I'm no expert. I just kind of know, you know, from years past and experience that if kids have an injury they need to take care of to get in action, they do, you know, and if there's a way that they can stay away from getting the flu, whether it be flu shots or staying away from somebody who's sick, they do. And, you know, this is something different, but I would venture to guess that, you know, that we would have a lot of compliance with kids who just say, I will do anything not to miss that next game or cost my team 2 weeks of a quarantine.
Yeah, unfortunately for, you know, high risk indoor sports like wrestling and basketball, those outdoor sports with lower risk and even higher risk sports like football are kind of see the light at the end of the day here. And the response from administrators around the state have been, let's prioritize these sports, put them first, that we think they have the greatest chance of playing first. Last week, the WIA met with a rep from the governor's office and the Department of Health to try to make sense of these new metrics. As I said, they had in hand data that you had put together, trying to make sense of you know, what's this reasonable timeline and jump from phase one to phase two. The Department of Health released its first numbers, which somewhat it gave you somewhat of a fact check to see kind of, okay, was everything that I was looking at, was my approach, was I going about it the right way? Based on what you've seen, does it give you hope that in February or when these leagues are starting to make decisions on when play will start, which typically is, you know, mid to late February, early March, that's possible, that's feasible?
I think it is. I think, you know, the unknown right now is how big the spike will be from the winter break, from New Year's Eve, from Christmas holiday and all that. I think if you look at the trends after breaks like that, after Thanksgiving, there's going to be an upward swing of you know, cases. How quickly we're able to get over that and back, you know, down to where our numbers will be heading the right direction, I think will happen pretty rapidly. You know, I don't know about every region, but I think at least some regions will. And you know, I think, you know, you look at, you know, Pierce County, King County, Snohomish, they're pretty close, you know. And I think the, you know, Spokane and the, I guess we're, what do we have, 10 counties we're looking at, not far away either, if we can get over this next spike pretty quickly.
I mentioned leagues are starting to break away and are given the option by the WIA whether or not to, you know, stick with that official season or do something and create a locally prioritized schedule. Your guys' league at the B level, have you met and discussed? I know the GSL is set to announce something in the next, what I'm hearing, in the next couple days, maybe sooner than that. But as it affects St. George's, have you guys decided on what to do?
We haven't. We're going to meet tomorrow, the 1Bs and 2Bs in our region. It is a little bit complicated with just the geographic area that we span. I mean, we are from the Oregon border to the Idaho border to the Canadian border. And so, you know, I imagine there's going to be a good discussion tomorrow about where we go from here and, you know, what's, you know, I think, I mean, right now the plan is to start February 1st, but that could be moved back, you know, depending on what we have tomorrow. You know, I think we just got to be ready, and we've kind of made it a, you know, the philosophical, you know, decision to say, okay, we're going to wait till last minute. And as ADs, we're willing to scramble to put it on for the kids and get it going. Much easier to move it back if we need to. But, you know, I think we will hang in. And if we need to schedule the first three games or batches or meets or whatever, we can do that in a hurry and then go from there. There are a lot of logistics to consider, you know, when you talk about officials, you talk about transportation is a big one. You know, I mean, with how big our area is, to put kids on a bus for 2 hours, it could be something that's not well liked by our regional health directors. And so do we have parents drive all those kids or not? There's a lot of questions still to make sure that we keep kids at as low risk as possible.
I know as we look at these fall sports being first in line, you would love to put on that athletic director hat, another hat that you wear, and one that, you know, people around the state might be most familiar with is your role as the boys basketball coach at St. George's. Basketball now is sort of been put last in line, along with wrestling and other high-risk indoor sports, just because right now it doesn't seem that there's an immediate road to a return to play, and that putting them kind of last in that order will give basketball maybe the best chance of playing. Do you think that order of things, and I know that as of a couple weeks ago, as it was on the schedule, basketball was set to start in February. Do you agree with that? Do you think that hoops being last in line gives you guys the best chance to play?
We have a pretty good learning rate when it comes to this pandemic, and if we can get a lot of people, you know, inoculated, I think that's going to be a huge deal for basketball, wrestling. I did catch in the meeting yesterday, they said, you know, you could actually wrestle outside. The thought is they'll get football off as a high risk sport because it's outside and they're masked up and makes it more of a moderate risk deal. You know, you could wrestle outside. You know, you could throw four mats in the middle of a stadium and go, and then that brings it right to where it is for football. I'm not sure we have enough outdoor courts to make basketball go that way, but yeah, I think it gives us the best chance. I think all the kids remain hopeful. Last year was devastating when we lost our spring sports, and we want to make sure those kids get their chance too. And I think when you put that where to, you know, if you put it in the right after fall sports here, I think you give them the best chance to have a season as well. And even if you have to bump it back or pause, you can push it a little bit. So, I can't wait to get back to hoop. I think this is the longest stretch that I've been away from basketball since I've been about five. So yeah, this is, it's tough, but I'm gonna hope we're gonna get there. Yeah,
you've had a lot of great teams too in the past, and you know, the team that you guys are putting together this year is set to be pretty good too, and so I hope that you guys get the chance to play. And boy, I gotta say, wrestling outside, I'd be interested to see that up close.
I would too. Yeah, I wonder if we can borrow that Hoop Fest court too. They put it together like in the convention center there. I'm gonna have to call Dan up and say, hey, you know, let's move that thing up to St. George's and let's get some games going.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think, it would be kind of fun. I mean, you know, I think wrestlers usually up for anything. So that would be actually a pretty fun switch for a year.
Well, we're all rolling with the punches, and Ryan, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule with all the hats you're wearing to kind of break this whole state of things down. Appreciate you taking the time.
You bet. I appreciate all that you guys are doing. I think keeping these high school sports on the forefront means a lot to the kids, means a lot to the coaches and the community, and you guys are doing great things, and love the podcasts. Love them. A lot of great folks you're having on here, and I sure appreciate it.
For SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, he's Ryan Paplinski. I'm Andy Bueller. We will be back next week. podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. And thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.